I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now. Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is the round two recap for the PGA Championship, the halfway point, and we're here to break it all down. Let me bring in Greg Ducharme, all the way from the East Coast. Greg, what up?
This has been a fun day. it's late here. It's 11:05 here on the East Coast. I'm loving it. I love the primetime golf. Like I said yesterday, I mean, you get to go through a whole, you work a whole day, watch golf at night, and this is the best. It's the best. And we got a great leaderboard. So I'm having a great time.
All right. And on the same coast as I, it's Mark Immelman. What's going on, Mark?
I got to work early this morning, just 3 hours relief. We stepped in there for the ESPN crew. So this afternoon, I was chilling in my hotel room watching golf on TV like everyone else. So, I mean, what a day for me. I'm ordinarily out there trudging around the place trying to get my opinion. And I just got to watch golf for a little while and it was thoroughly entertaining. I got a real golf course and it's a major championship setup and golf course, and it's going to spit out a pretty sporty finish if I know what I'm talking about.
All right. And I think you do know what you're talking about. Quick reminder, you can get us on YouTube. Go and subscribe to First Cut Podcast over on YouTube so you can see these videos and these recaps as soon as they come out. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. But let's break down the leaderboard, gentlemen. And just like we saw this all coming, Greg, Hao Tong Lee is in the lead at the 36th hole mark of this event, and he's doing it a lot with the putter, as we usually see from the 36 hole leader. But Hao Tong Lee is a legit golfer, right? We don't see a lot of him over here on the PGA Tour, but he is a legit golfer.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been as high as 32nd in the official world golf rankings before. This is a player from China who he won in Dubai, beating Rory McIlroy, right? And this is at a time where, and if I remember this correctly, it was 2018. And the two previous winners of the Masters also won that event. And so heading into Masters, we kind of had a little Hao Tong Lee watch going on. And he actually played pretty well at Augusta that year. So it was very interesting to watch. Now, there are definitely some concerns with what took place after the round. But what we saw on the golf course from Hao Tong Lee, yes, getting a lot of the work done with the putter. He's through two rounds fifth in strokes gained putting. But he definitely gained a lot approaching the green. He's third approaching the green. The concern is for me with Hao Tong Lee is he hit, I think, 5 of 14 fairways today. And it was kind of a – although he was able to get it on 12 or 13 greens, it was kind of a scrambling day. And I just worry – you got to get the ball in the fairway a little bit more over the weekend, in my opinion.
Okay, let me address the elephant in the room here. Okay, first, Hao Tong Lee is a practicer. The guy's like Vijay Singh. He's one of those. Even though if he plays well or badly, he's going to wear out the driving range. That's just in his DNA. Now, if you've got a shot at a major championship, I don't know what the big brouhaha was. Now, did he practice for too long? Yeah, according to us, he did. He might just be doing exactly what he needs to do because, look, he's now got – he's 36 holes away from – an incredible feat. There's only one champion, major champion from China. That's Shan Xiangfeng, right? So now he's got a shot, and he's battled driver. Heck, he came out of Memphis last week, finishing like second to last or whatever it was there, and couldn't keep the ball in Memphis C. You've got a place now where conditions are becoming more and more punitive because the place is drying out, and you better be playing from the fairway. So if you watched what he was doing on the range there, he was hitting a number of drives. Then he was hitting a number of wedges from like the 100 to about 60-yard range, which tells me, okay, I've missed. Now I've got to set up a wedge play to try and salvage a par. And then we swam around the green for a long time where he's hitting a number of the shots where these little deft sort of where you float the thing 15 feet and try and stop it quick. Look, will he perhaps wear himself out and tire himself out? Absolutely. But you've got to make sure you have full ammunition and you're feeling confident in what you're doing going into Saturday, Sunday on a major championship, because now it's big boy golf and you better be ready for it.
Just real quick, Rick, I want to ask Mark, are you familiar with his routine throughout a normal tournament? Because the thing that struck me is it seemed like this was almost like a time kill. It didn't seem like it was a routine. It didn't seem normal. It seemed like it was, well, there's nothing else to do, so I'm going to hit some balls in practice. But I wonder, and my thing is, when you're in this position, you have to be in your routine. The guys that are going to win this tournament know exactly what they're going to do with their day. They have it all scripted out. They know exactly what time they're going to get up to prepare. They know what they're going to do after the round. They know how the whole day is going to go, and that's going to keep them the most prepared. And it just didn't look like that. And maybe it's the way it was broadcasted. I don't know what his typical routine is, but it didn't seem normal. Is this something that you've seen from him before?
Well, Greg, that's a good question. The only other times I've seen him was at the Masters. And at the Masters, whenever I walked onto the range, he was there. Yeah. And then whenever I walked off the campus, he was there. So this is kind of his thing. So I don't know. You know, inside is 2020. You know, he might play poorly tomorrow or Sunday and we'll be like, well, he shouldn't have practiced so long on Friday. But then what if he goes ahead and plays great and his energy levels are way high? Because remember, the adrenaline is pumping through this dude's veins right now, okay? And you got to burn all that stuff. And in hotels, I don't know where he's staying. Hotels, you're not allowed in gyms over here. Everything's essentially closed. So what's he going to go lie around in his room? So it's, you know, if this was regular time, not COVID protocol, I would say, yeah, okay, this was a bit odd. This is a bunch, and if you go back to the hotel, you can't work out, you can't do that sort of stuff.
It's a really good point. If he goes and shoots another bogey free 65 on Saturday, you're going to see a lot more guys at the range for 3 and 4 hours after that round. Let's turn our attention to the boys at 6 under and what our colleague Kyle Porter would refer to as the real lead, Greg, where you've got a couple of these big boys here: Tommy Fleetwood, Jason Day. Oh, by the way, Brooks Koepka. Let's start with him. And you want to talk about things that are happening on the course or off the course. Brooks Koepka is getting stretched out in the middle of a PGA Tour, a PGA Championship round on the back nine. I've never seen anything like this.
So the first time I saw him down in this position, my first thought was, honestly, it's Jason Day. And I couldn't believe it. Then I realized it was Brooks, and my concern level went down a little bit, and hearing him afterwards talk about how it's his hip, it's not his knee, it definitely reduces my concern level. But it's a unique circumstance. It's not a good thing. It's just something I think he can overcome. But if there's anybody that can do it, like 2008 Tiger winning on a broken leg, it's one of the most talked about majors in history, and in my opinion, the most impressive. If there's anybody that can replicate something like that, it's Brooks Koepka, because he is going to take home this trophy. He doesn't care what stands in his way, and a tight hip isn't gonna end his chances at holding a three-peat. I mean, how many guys have experience attempting a three-peat, let alone back-to-back years? He's attempted a three-peat twice now. He did it just last year. So this is a remarkable performance so far. And this is a guy who, we could talk about the stats all you want, but He just gets it done. And how many times has he had an 8 or 9 footer for par that he seems to will in the hole? It's look, this is what I'll say. There is maybe
Greg, you're preaching, brother. I love what you're saying right now.
Yeah. I don't care about any of it because he's just gonna get it done. He's gonna do whatever he has to do to get it done. And there are three guys that I kind of raise my eyebrows at on this leaderboard if you're Brooks Koepka. And I think let's just say you're still looking slightly down at these guys. So I think Brooks is in a really good position, and he is the real leader right now. I think tomorrow he sets the bar.
Well, producer Jacob coming in hot here with potential major three-peats since World War I. Tiger's had three different chances at the three-peat. He has not accomplished it. Brooks Koepka, of course, at the 2019 U.S. Open, he finished sixth. And then this outcome that we are awaiting this week. Oh, and now Jacob's dropping more into the chat. So I'm going to throw it over to you, Mark, because you said this is big boy golf we are playing right now, and when it comes to major season and it comes to the PGA Championship, nobody bigger than Brooks Koepka.
Yeah, you know what's major championship golf to me oftentimes is that war of attrition, and it's survival of adversity. And Kyle made the point, I was laughing underneath my breath. We were on HQ earlier, and ordinarily he'll spout some strokes gain number, and if someone's putting poorly, putting great but hitting poorly, he's going to say, well, you got no chance over the weekend. And then there's Brooks, on the other hand, who was not hitting the ball so great, but, you know, just making all sorts of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-foot putts to just recover and to handle the rough patch and keeping himself in it. And Kyle referenced this thing, and I wanted to pat him on the back and say, hey, you've now recognized what it takes to win golf at the highest level. You've got to survive, then you've got to take advantage when you can, then you've got to survive, and you've got to take advantage when you can. And the way this golf course is stacking up right now, Rick, it was getting firm this afternoon. It was firm when I was out there this morning. I got to tell you, even the rough is thinning out a little bit. It's still punitive, but it's getting to a place now where you're in there, but you can hit yourself one giant flyer out there to a firm green, and all of a sudden you're going to be recovering. And the way he is recovering sort of sets him apart for me right now. And that's what the big boys do. They find a way, to use Greg's term, to somehow put a par on the card, because I have a sneaking sense that Sunday afternoon par is going to be golden around this place.
Mark, do you think that we, and Rick, I want to get your take on this too. Do you think we have, entering the week, overrated the difficulty of the rough a little bit? I feel like there are a lot of players up here who hit very few fairways who are able to quite often get the ball on the green. I mean, Brooks Koepka hit a 5-iron from 251 onto the green from the rough. Now, I know he is at times superhuman, and I understand that, but do we overrate the difficulty of thick rough on PGA Tour? Are these guys just so good where they can handle almost any kind of rough?
Well, Mark, you were actually mentioning before we came on, you know, you could be standing directly on top of a ball and not be able to see it. So I don't know if it is just kind of random in the lie that gets drawn, or if we are overvaluing or overestimating the rough and just how good these guys are. What do you think of the rough out there? You're feeling it.
The rough is just downright horrid in spots. I mean, I had Phil Mickelson this morning where I had to look down on the golf ball to see it underneath what was about 3 inches of this poa, rye, whatever it is, mix. And they came to me and Jim Nance was like, what? And I'm like, he could use a backhoe out of you, and he had 100 yards. And he barely got the thing to the front of the green, which was about 80 yards. And then you get situations where, just because it's this maritime climate, the poa grass, let's remember, grows at different speeds. And so there's certain areas where it is sprouted, it's gotten water, and the stuff is lush. And there's certain areas where it's gotten burned out. Think of poa greens on a Sunday afternoon. You get brown spots and green spots and that sort of deal. You're seeing the same thing here in the rough. So you can hit it in the rough a few times and get awfully lucky, but you can hit it in the rough a few times and get your rear end smoked for you. So it's there is a little fortune involved, but to the question, yes, these guys are strong. Are we overestimating the rough? Not so much. I will tell you, the rough is not as moist as what it was when I got to the course Tuesday morning, because when I saw that stuff Tuesday, I was like, oh my goodness, it is unplayable in spots.
Tommy Fleetwood goes out and shoots one of his Tommy Fleetwood major rounds, Greg. I feel like we've seen this story before, reminiscent of the 63 he shot in the final round of the 2018 U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills. Goes out and shoots a 64 on Friday, only one bogey on the card. Kind of felt like Tommy Fleetwood, who, you know, made his first start back at the 3M Open, like he was kind of working through things in the last couple of rounds. He's played six rounds heading into this week, but this was like peak Tommy on Friday. He looked really good.
And heading into the week, if you look at a golf course like this, the way it was forecasted to play, it has Tommy Fleetwood written all over it. The only concern is we've only seen him play twice, and it hasn't necessarily been great. Right, still kind of getting his feet under him. But when you have an emphasis on driving the ball, as Mark says, rough is unplayable in places. He is a long, straight driver of the golf ball. And heading into the week, my head went to Paris. And I was thinking, well, who are guys who played really well there? Because this is kind of a similar situation where you have rough that becomes very difficult to advance the ball out of. And there's a premium on driving. And we saw European players dominate us because of more accurate tee shots. So for Tommy Fleetwood, we kind of saw that off the tee today, right? He led the field in strokes gained off the tee today. He was first. He hit 12 of 14 fairways. Now, he played from the fairway all day, and this was a vintage Tommy Fleetwood round. I mean, unfortunately, it doesn't happen on a Sunday, and we still have a lot of golf left, but he played really, really, really well, and he's swinging nicely right now.
The note on Tommy Fleetwood, Mark, is, of course, that he's never won on the PGA Tour, a runner-up four separate occasions in 67 career starts. So we're talking about big boy golf. We're talking about big boy course. We're talking about a major championship. Can a guy like Tommy Fleetwood, is he ready to make his first PGA Tour victory a major championship?
I think he's paid his dues. Just to that thing, well, he's never won that argument. Well, I'm related to a guy that had never won a major championship, and yeah, then won a major championship under some very tough conditions. And Fleetwood, you look at the majors he's played well at. Last year at Portrush, it was grisly at times. Shinnecock Hills, I mean, Phil Mickelson picked up a golf ball on the green and was unsure of the penalty. Right? So it was, that's how hard it was. So I feel like Tommy's paid his dues. I feel like he comes in here well run. You know, he had played in a couple of events, and the game's trending in the right direction. And I made the point earlier, and I just want to visit this real fast. I've always maintained that major championship is a game of recovery. But if you hit the two straightest face clubs in your bag well, you've got the leg up on folks. He's driving it super, and he's making lots of putts. And all of these holes coming down the stretch, because this thing to me will be decided over the final four or five holes, okay? Not 16, 17, 18. I feel like you might have to make a birdie or two coming through that stretch. But if you go 12, 13, 14, 15, those holes are mean. And all of them, I've got Lake Merced basically on your left-hand side, and the prevailing wind is a westerly that comes into you off the right. Now, that's going to expose any ball on a right-hander's golf swing. And Fleetwood is hitting this tumbling draw. I was watching him play. The thing, you can set your wristwatch on it right now. So with a left-to-right wind, he can turn this draw in there. It basically holds each other up. They cancel each other. And he's punching the ball through the wind like it's cutting the wind in half right now. And so I feel like if things stay the way they are, and if we get a Saturday like this tomorrow, if he keeps driving it the way he is, I think he's really got the advantage.
I really do like that, because we talk about it a lot, but we always forget. Everyone was not a PGA Tour winner until they were. Yeah. Right. Tiger Woods had zero PGA Tour victories until he did, which is always something I think we should remember. Greg, there are so many names here, all at 6 under. Jason Day, Daniel Berger, Justin Rose. Take your pick. Pick one of those guys. Tell me what you saw and what you think about him moving forward.
Well, so the guy that I want to go to is Justin Rose. And at the beginning of the week, he was the guy where I didn't know what to say. And much like Tommy Fleetwood, This is a golf course and a setup that was projected to be a Justin Rose. I mean, perfect for Justin Rose. Like if Justin Rose was in good form coming into this, he would have been the most popular pick out there by far, because this just sets up so perfectly for him, everything that's required. And so anyway, but what we've seen out of him is, this reminds me a lot of what happened at the US Open last year. This is a Justin Rose whose game has, through his career, it's evolved, and he's becoming a scrambler. He is a wizard around the greens. I'm not saying he wasn't before, but he's never had to lean on it until about last year, even when he was world number one. Now, his short game was in great form when he was world number one, but he didn't have to lean on it. He was still hitting a lot of greens of regulation. He was still gaining a lot approaching the greens and off the tee. This week, he is gaining a lot approaching the greens, which is the advantage, and that's why I bring him up, because he's gained over the two rounds 3.6 strokes gained approach the green, and that is an advantage, because you're looking at a guy who's scrambling. It's a tough round. There's a lot of par putts that are being made. There's some immaculate shots. He's 6 of 7 scrambling for the week, or he was 6 of 7 scrambling for the day, I believe. And so it's just extremely impressive what he's doing around the greens. Can Justin Rose get the ball into play enough to make a birdie down the stretch, in that stretch of really mean holes that Mark talks about? Is he going to have to rely on a short game over the weekend, or is he going to put the ball in position where he can utilize his ball striking? Because I'll tell you what, relying on short game, it's difficult to last, because conditions get more difficult. Hole locations get more difficult. Pressure increases. And it's exactly what we saw last year at the US Open. Eventually, he didn't get up and down. And that's what's going to happen again here. So for Justin Rose, you got to figure out a way to get the ball into the fairway a little more, so you can hit more than 11 or 12 greens as he has the first 2 days. Because I don't see a guy going 6 of 7 in scrambling on Sunday at a PGA Championship. That's what he was today, by the way. Yesterday, he was 5 of 6. So yeah, 11 of 13 for the week so far.
I love your point there, Greg. But the conundrum is that you can't rely on your short game, but you sort of have to rely on your short game if you're going to win, because you can't ball. You're not going to ball strike your way to success. You're going to have a situation around here where you're going to have one hit a green, bumble through the back into that thick stuff, and then you better have all your facilities about you. In terms of these names up there, I'm just fascinated by the storylines. I mean, there's Brooks being Brooks. I wish I could ask him, but I'm wondering if him lying down on the ground and having someone stretch on his leg is just not made for television sort of stuff, you know, because he's doing that sort of thing right now. I mean, they interview him about his diet. Did you see those little segments? And he goes, well, I had 5 Tic Tacs and 15 rations of bacon. And so there's Brooks doing Brooks, and there's Tommy Fleetwood being Fleetwood, and there's Ha-Tong Lee and Jason Day. I love the story, but I've just got to go. I need to give a nod. It's like we never talk about Brendan Tarter, right? But he fell away a little bit today. But Mike Lorenzo Vera, right? Lorenzo Vera. This guy, I mean, he's so flamboyant. I've watched him play for a while. And he sort of reminds me of Jan Vanderveld in a funny sort of a way at Carnoustie. And I have a sense. Now, first off, I need to just tell you guys that he learned the short game from Jose Maria Olazabal, who rode a short game to 2 major championships, 2 Masters ago. Because that guy, everyone said Ollie was great, but would never make it because he couldn't drive the ball in play. Well, he's a Hall of Famer now. Same thing with Seve Ballesteros. And Lorenzo Vera's got some of the sort of stuff, and he learned the short game from Ollie. And he's just got this thing about him where he is fascinating. I have the sneaking suspicion that somehow coming down the stretch on Sunday that something like Vanderveld's going to happen. And I can't think of anything more entertaining just for the show and for the stories. And imagine if, you know, just for the growth of the game, now I sound like a nerd, but if Ha-Tong wins, or if Lorenzo Vera wins, what they do for golf in their countries. And if we all, true to what we're saying about growing the game, that's what we should kind of be pulling for, in as much as what I want Brooks to win because I picked him in one and done.
Lorenzo Vera gave such a great story after his round about how he was rock bottom, dead last on the challenge tour, now in contention of a major championship, is absolutely awesome. Shouts to Jason Day, still in this thing. Daniel Berger's been straight vibing since the restart, a first, a second, a third, and oh, by the way, just two shots off the lead again. This is an absolutely packed leaderboard, and we haven't even gotten to Tiger Woods yet, who we're going to get to on the other side. First, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. Don't forget, CBS is your home for the PGA Championship this weekend. We have plenty of ways for you to watch, including streaming on OTT devices through CBS All Access. You can also watch for free on CBSSports.com or the CBS Sports mobile app. We'll be chatting, on Saturday and Sunday for a few hours. Stop by and say hello. Coverage begins at 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday and 3 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, so you do not want to miss out. All right, gentlemen, we got to talk about the big cat whose big problem on Friday was the putter. Mark, we'll start with you on this. We've been talking about he's using a different putter. It's a little bit longer. It takes a little bit of the pressure off his back. Looked good on Thursday. Made a couple of putts that really held his round together. He made a 20-foot par putt. Friday, just a completely different story. There was a lid on the cup for him.
Yeah, but I'm not going to talk about the putter that much because he hit a number of putts that it just looked like he couldn't figure out the speed. And if you're putting from places where you're putting defensively, you're never going to look like you've got the speed of stuff figured out. That's my first observation. And then that sort of takes me to how the course is playing. And it's like we were talking in the break, this is a major championship spot. And majors, they're frustrating. You know, majors are difficult. They're meant to be. Majors, the conditions are punitive, and the situations are pressure-packed. I think in our setup show, we talked about how every shot is on the knife edge, and from the first round, first shot, you have got pressure on you, and you're playing with a lot of adrenaline. But majors is also about surviving. And if that was Tiger Woods' bad day, what is he? Is even par, right?
Yeah.
And that's eight back with two rounds to play?
Six off the real lead, Mark.
The real stuff, yeah. you know what? Would he be happy with the performance today? No. Once he's got over it and he's like, okay, I've got two rounds left around this place. I'm out tomorrow morning while the golf course still has a little bit of moisture in it. If I put up something in the mid-60s, I am right back in the midst of this thing. So I'm prepared to chalk up today with a lid on the hole being everyone's going to have that sort of a run. You just don't want to have that happen on Sunday afternoon. Does that make sense?
Of course. And we obviously poke about the real lead, but I think you're dead on about, so Tiger's actually had a quote on this after his round. He said the putting green is faster than the golf course. It's been like that all week. But then he mentioned, Greg, the pin positions. And he said some of the pins were up on the crest. So you're putting into the green early. And then if you go past the hole, it's down green. And that might be a little bit of what Mark was mentioning, where he just kind of had the speed, just a little bit off on speed. Basically the only two putts he made, he rolled in with authority. He made one on 10 that I thought might have been able to kind of kickstart this round for him. It didn't end up happening, but the two more aggressive strokes he took are the ones that ended up, of course, finding the bottom of the cup.
That putt on 10, I'm glad you brought that up. That was just complete will. It was total. It was like, I'm not three putting for par right now. he completely willed that ball into the hole. So I sensed frustration out of him today. Which is, I'm not saying necessarily that's a bad thing, but I've always felt like Tiger has his finger on the pulse of where he needs to be at certain points in a tournament. And I felt like he was putting himself in those positions throughout the round, and he wasn't capitalizing. And he felt the frustration because, like, now all of a sudden he's behind the eight ball. Whereas yesterday in Thursday's round, he's in his way in. There's not a point in time where it always felt yesterday like Tiger was exactly where he wanted to be. It feels like he's in control of the scorecard almost, which he's the only player I've ever really seen where I've had that feeling. And so there were a couple of moments today where he has these putts and he misses them. And it's like, okay, now it's like it became real for Tiger, and the frustration became real for Tiger. So that was definitely a little bit concerning. But you know, to Mark's point about how, and to Tiger's point about how some of those putts were a little bit strange today, a lot of the putts that he narrowly missed, they broke early and they were straight late. And I've always felt like that's the hardest kind of a putt to make. You got to kind of get it going, just breaking off the first couple of feet at the right angle, and then it kind of straightens out. I find those to be hard. Late breaking putts, I think it's easier to visualize, especially for a player like Tiger, who's so in touch with the visualization. So it was an interesting day. I think he's a little bit too far back at this point. I don't know. What do you guys think the lead's going to be? I'm kind of thinking, I think he can get to 11 under for a winning score, and I'm not sure that's out there for a guy at even par.
Mark, I think the real question here, Mark can help us with, how much is this course changing throughout the day? You know, we saw a couple of low scores kind of early. We know, I mean, I know this on the West Coast, especially in the Bay Area, that wind can start kicking up in the afternoon. How different is it? Can Tiger get a really good split tomorrow morning?
Yes, he can. Greg makes a good point. Let's say the wing score gets to 12. I'd said 12 early in the week. That's a long way. I mean, you're shooting 64 twice. Is that on? Well, you're not going to get to play early twice, because if you shoot 64 tomorrow afternoon, right. You'll be fairly late. But I don't see the lead going away very much further. I'd say double digits right now might be a big deal, because the leaders are off at whatever time in the afternoon tomorrow, and they're going to have a pretty good wind. They're going to have a pretty firm golf course. The rough hasn't been cut. The greens are getting rolled morning and evening. And so it's this golf course is growing up before our eyes. And Kerry Hague is a master course setup guy. And he can sort of set, okay, this is what I want the winning score to be. And they can engineer the thing, the golf course as such. So is it possible? Yes. Is it probable the Tiger wins? No. But is he likely to go out and play well tomorrow morning? I would think so, because he's hitting the ball fine. I mean, the swing looks unencumbered. He looks like he's got some decent control about him. He just needs to find a way to, you know, get one or two of the putts to fall. And he's got to get off to the par fives.
All right, we will keep our eye on Tiger on Saturday. Couple of quick items, gentlemen, a couple of things I've not necessarily seen before. Greg, Ricky Fowler missed a 6-inch tap-in. He did not whiff his tap-in because he made contact with it. I'm not sure I've seen something like that before. He stubbed it.
He stubbed it. That was one of a kind, and it would only happen to Ricky Fowler. So I don't have much to say, except I'm just shaking my head. Like, what do you say? I mean, there's obviously no – it's just such a unique sort
of. How many strokes did he lose on that shot?
No. I'll tell you what you say, Greg. The PGA professional golf instructor in you should be saying to everyone listening to this, every shot – is worth one stroke. And even if it's a foot and a half away, you get up and you give the thing its due recognition, and you not necessarily take your time, but be very careful. You can't get in there and one hand stuff and on one leg and look like a flamingo when you're playing in major championships. I'm sorry. Lanny Watkins did that. I'm convinced he could have won more majors if he didn't backhand putts from 4 feet because he was aggravated.
Well
said, Mark.
Obviously, every shot matters, but when you miss the cut by one shot and that one is on your card, not great. Mark, golf is the ultimate gentleman's game. We saw a couple of instances of that. Cameron Tringale goes back to the scoring tent after he signs an incorrect scorecard, lets everybody know he had the wrong score on there. He gone. That's a DQ. And Rory McIlroy actually gives himself a worse lie, trying to replicate a lie by after his ball was kind of partially stepped on the side of a green. That is what is great about this game, I would say.
Yeah, it heartens me. I got to tell you, Cameron Tringali is just a diamond of a human being. That doesn't surprise me at all because of just his faith in what he believes and the kind of human he is. So good on him. And then Rory, I mean, that was all quality, and we come to expect that out of Rory. And the situation was, the ref, like we said, is punitive. In certain situations, like I was involved in a search for a golf ball for Ricky, incidentally left of six, yesterday in round one. And there were about 20 people, and we looked for like 2 minutes and 58 seconds before we found the thing. And you had to look down onto the top of the ball. So this marshal was looking around for Rory's ball, stands on it. And so the rule is you replace the thing. But Rory put it down then. It was perched up pretty well. Now, he could have done that. He could have hit it from there. But at least, you know, he's recognizing the integrity of the game. He's respecting the field. There's all these cliches and stuff, but he did the right thing. So good on Rory.
All right, gentlemen, we're going to do the right thing right now, and we are going to predict the winner of the PGA Championship, and it's going to be absolutely correct. I'm sure we'll get this all right. I'm just going to stick with Brooks Koepka. Picked him before we started. He's 4-1, thanks to our friends over at William Hill. He's the favorite. I'll just stay there. Greg, who you got winning the PGA Championship?
Like you, Rick, I picked Brooks Koepka as well. Yeah, is there anybody here who's going to stand up to Brooks Koepka face to face on Sunday and say, I'm going to go beat you? And I don't think there, maybe Justin Rose is the guy who I kind of have circled in that category. I don't think Jason Day would be afraid either. Yeah. But man, I think this Brooks is a man who's determined, and I think he is going to figure out a way to get it done.
Jason Day is the guy that I'm like super sneaky scared about a little bit, who might just come steal this thing. Mark, what say you?
I want Brooks to win because of my one and done aspirations. We're getting close to crunch time over here. But I'm going to stick with Fleetwood. He came up big in the Ryder Cup on a golf course that you had to drive the thing in play. And he made some really crucial putts. And this golf course has got a real European kind of a feel to it. You know, there's a chill in the air. There are crosswinds on a number of holes. You know, Brooks is going to take some beating, but I get concerned when I'm seeing a guy getting his body stretched on in the middle of a round of golf. So I don't know if that's made for television or if that's a real thing. But I'll tell you what, the one thing I know for certain is Tommy Fleetwood is hitting the ball through the wind right now, and it's seriously impressive.
Whatever happens on Saturday, whatever happens on Sunday, we are in store for a good one. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me. You can find Greg on Twitter at TheRealGFD. You can find Mark Immelman at Mark_Immelman. You can find myself at RickRunGood. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.